This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. I'm Fraser Spears and I'm joined by Bradley Chambers. And today we've got a couple of topics for you. We're going to talk a little about Apple TV and then we're going to talk in some detail about iCloud and education. How are you doing, Bradley?
It's been a good week so far. Of course, it's just Monday when we're recording. We have officially started school and I always forget that once school starts, it seems like my life drastically slows down, that the weeks leading up to school are so busy. And then, for example, we started school Wednesday. All of a sudden, my life just got really quiet. Nobody came into my office. I was able just to get some work done. And I realized it's because students are back. And so all of our teachers are actually teaching rather than preparing. Our school shares space with a church as well. And one of the things that happens every summer at our church is a group called World Changers comes in and does projects in the community. And they actually stay in our classrooms. So we basically have to tear down every single classroom every single school year. And so the 2 weeks leading up to it are really crazy just because we literally are rebuilding classrooms.
Yeah, that's there's always a bit of change, but that's a pretty special one. Our big project this year is one of our chimneys in the school has had to be taken off because it was, I mentioned before in an older show that we're in quite an old building, and one of the chimneys became a bit unstable over the summer, so there's people working on the school desperately trying to get that chimney settled down and then get all their scaffolding away before next week. We're back. Today's Monday. We're back next Monday, and that's us back in for the term. So teachers are back today for the first time. And I always try and kick off this week with what's new in technology sort of thing. So bringing teachers up to speed on things like Mountain Lion's release, why you might want Mountain Lion. And in our case, the big reason we want Mountain Lion is because you now have iCloud document syncing from Pages and Keynote and Numbers over to the iPad. So that immediately sold quite a lot of teachers in Mountain Lion. And we talked a bit about Apple TV. We've had a couple of Apple TVs in the school for about a year now. And we've kind of fallen in love with them, I would say. And I think education is sort of slowly falling in love with the Apple TV. I kind of realized pretty quickly when Apple brought out the second generation Apple TV, the one that's sort of black and small, that with AirPlay, there was some potential for interesting things. So we got one a year ago, and I had that in my classroom for about a year. And, you know, back in iOS 4 days, and also with iPad 1, there's not so much you can do with that. You can certainly AirPlay video content. So we used it for things like people sharing YouTube videos and things. So kids, I would put the kids on YouTube and they would find, you know, if I'm teaching robotics or something, you know, me telling somebody about robotics is the most boring lesson ever. But looking at robots working is the coolest thing ever. And YouTube, turns out, is full of videos of robots working. So we would use it for things like that. But when iPad 2 came out, obviously, we then got AirPlay mirroring for the device. So I had been using that. Our kids are still on iPad 1, but the teachers were on iPad 2, and I just sort of fell in love with being able to mirror my entire display on the iPad up to the TV, and then I'm not tied to the front. It's just wireless, and I can go anywhere I want to. So we kind of held off for a long time, but today we sort of finally made the decision that we were going to put an Apple TV in just about every classroom in the school. There's one or two rooms that we're not going to do for various reasons, because they've got integrated projector smart boards. So we're not going to do them straight away. But most of the other classrooms by next week are going to have an Apple TV. So that's my job for the rest of this week and next week, is to find some Apple TVs and get them all hooked up.
How many will you be purchasing?
I think we're doing 5. There's already 2 classrooms that have got Apple TVs. So we're doing 5 or 6 more. That we don't have that many classrooms in the school. But one of the things that kind of broke the logjam for us was that, you know, obviously the Apple TV only has an HDMI output, which meant that we thought that meant that we were going to have to replace every projector with a flat screen television before we could go to Apple TV. And that was true up until recently. But we found a device called the Canex ATV Pro, which is an HDMI to VGA adapter, and it works perfectly. Now, I've seen several of these things. There's one called HD Fury, and there's different things, and they were all quite expensive, and none of them worked very well until we found this one, the Canex device, and it costs about £50. And it's just a little tiny, if you imagine an Apple TV shrunk down to about a sixth of its size, that's what it looks like. It's got a short HDMI cable on one end, and the little box has got a VGA output and a mini jack. So you can plug in both your projector and a set of powered speakers, and you've basically got an Apple TV, except it's on a massive projector screen. Because that was one of the things we learned using flat screen TVs. We had got two 40-inch Sony televisions in the school, and those were fine for small classrooms, but for large classrooms, they just didn't work because kids could sit, were sitting just too far away from the display to see any detail that was on the screen. So what we've done is we've taken that TV from my classroom, put it in a smaller room, and moved the projector back into my classroom. So almost all of these ones, we're buying an Apple TV, and we're putting a Canex ATV adapter on that as well.
I've heard good things about those. Our local Mac Authority, which is a very popular Mac reseller here in the States, carries them. And that's really a handy device in the education market and in the enterprise market, because it's not feasible to just all of a sudden say, okay, we're going to replace every projector we have with flat screen televisions, and then you have to find a place to mount them. Then you've got to purchase some mount. Then you have to get the maintenance department involved to actually get those mounted. Then you've got to get the cables ran. And so even if you do have to spend, you know, an extra few dollars per Apple TV, it really makes the deployment that much simpler. How are you controlling AirPlay? Are you setting a passcode on each individual Apple TV? How will you keep kids from sending video to an Apple TV in another classroom?
Yeah, the only person that's actually done that so far is me. I did that by mistake one time. Our whole school's is still on one subnet for the moment, so every Apple TV is visible from everywhere else in the school. We haven't had, honestly, too many problems with that. We've had a couple, but I kind of wish two things were possible with Apple TV. I wish, one, that if a device is using the Apple TV, another device can't preempt it. Because if you connect the TV and then I try and connect the TV, I will actually win. I can kick you off the TV, which is, I'm not sure. I think the first device you'd have to relinquish control before another device can connect. There is the possibility of using a PIN code to get access to the Apple TV. We haven't set that yet because very quickly everybody would learn the PIN code anyway. So we didn't think that was very useful. What I would like to see with that is just a way, even if we don't get that preemption change, if it was even just possible that I think a message would come up on the display saying this device is requesting to take over the screen, yes or no, and the teacher could say yes or no with the controller, then that would be a step forward as well.
Yeah, we are actually using an Apple TV in our lobby just to project slides about our school and events going on, and I actually thankfully thought to turn AirPlay, well, I guess I set a passcode to it just to keep somebody from actually changing what was on the lobby. But I do agree with you, that would be nice to really get some more education like controls on the Apple TV to, you know, again, hold on. If you've connected to it, hold on to it until you release it. I think that would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, that seems to be the simplest story you could tell is, you know, you get it, then you've got to give it up before somebody else can get it. I mean, it's funny to think, you know, that this is a very, very kind of simple consumer device, but I've already seen on the web that there was a petition a couple of weeks ago from some Mac administrators group petitioning Apple to add enterprise management features to the Apple TV, which is, I think, is kind of a testament to its usefulness and importance and the demand from users for AirPlay capabilities, you know. And certainly people with much more complex networks often have trouble deploying the Apple TV. One example I'll give, and I know you've got some other examples, but a friend of mine worked in a school where any device that was connected to the network had to go through an HTML login page to get access to the internet. Now, obviously, the Apple TV doesn't have a browser, so there's no way that you could actually complete the login authentication on the Apple TV in order for the TV to get to the internet and register itself and talk to the store and so on and so on. So that was one example, and I know there's also this issue with Bonjour going across subnets as well.
we are in the same situation you are, where we are still on one subnet, but you're correct that if you have multiple subnets, let's say your wired network is on a different subnet than your wireless, and that is very common, especially in larger schools, you would need to find some sort of solution to intermediate that. I know Cisco's got a device coming out, but the one that I've used actually in testing is from Aerohive. Aerohive is our wireless vendor, and they actually partnered with Apple to create what's called the Bonjour Gateway, where it's literally one click in the setup of the access points, and you can choose what devices go across subnets. So if you wanted to, say, let your Apple TVs go across subnets, but maybe not your printers, you have that complete control. And you don't have to have a full Aerohive wireless network for that to work. So let's say you already have an HP wireless system or a Cisco wireless system. You simply need one Aerohive access point with the license for it, and then it works. And I think it's interesting that Apple really partnered with Aerohive on that. I think it shows that Apple is really hearing us, and they are knowing that we are wanting to use their products in ways maybe they didn't envision. And they're finding partners for that. Aerohive was actually given a slot at WWDC in one of the sessions to demo the technology. And again, I've used it in testing, and it does what it says it does.
Yeah, it seems to be good stuff. We've had a look at Aerohive in demonstration mode, if you like, and we were quite impressed with it as well. So there's definitely very good educational use for Apple TV. We've also... The other thing that's worth talking about with AirPlay is that Mountain Lion now supports AirPlay from certain Macs that are upgraded. Now, I'm recording this on, I've got a 2010 11-inch MacBook Air, which is running Mountain Lion, but that computer does not support AirPlay mirroring to an Apple TV. So recently, and in fact, just I think it was just yesterday, I discovered this application called AirParrot, which is an application you can install on your Mac. I think it's from the same people that did Reflection. I'm not terribly sure about that, but I think it is. And what that does is it basically gives you AirPlay capabilities for older Macs and also for Windows computers. So with a combination of people on iPad 2 or later, Macs and Windows users, almost everybody in the school now can talk to an Apple TV, which is fantastic. One of the cute features of AirParrot that it can do is it can restrict the mirroring to one individual window on the Mac. So you can take one browser window and put that on the Apple TV and still have the access to the rest of your stuff, which is really nice because it means that things like Notification Center doesn't pop up in the display when you're demonstrating something as well. So I think it's $10 for a license for AirParrot. And I bought a 5-pack for, I think, $30, so I can give out a few to teachers who need it in the school as well. So with that, we can be pretty much AirPlay only for almost every device in the school, which is great.
One of the ways I mentioned that we're using in our lobby is for showing slides, is all I've done is simply upload them to Flickr, and then in the Apple TV settings, the screensaver is set to watch that particular Flickr account. And so as we want to add new slides, we upload them to Flickr, we start and stop the screensaver, and it picks it right back up. And the situations where before you had to run a long VGA cable from a computer or had to get some sort of dedicated solution, I got some industrial strength Velcro and Velcroed the Apple TV to the back of the television, and we were good to go.
That's a great idea, actually. We still have a Mac Mini in our lobby for that purpose. But I think the display it's connected to has an HDMI input, so I might just get myself another Apple TV and set that one up too.
Well, and the third generation, again, is 1080p, and it's a really, really nice upgrade. And for $100, it can take over some of those tasks that you might, in years past, have picked up a Mac Mini for. And again, when you can literally Velcro it to the back of the television, has built-in Wi-Fi if you can't get Ethernet to it, it's really a great kind of multi-purpose device.
Yeah, I think probably versus running a Mac Mini 24/7, I think the power savings alone would probably pay for the Apple TV.
Yeah, it's a great device. My goal as we pick up more and more iPads is to, as we replace older projectors, to replace projectors that have HDMI ports and pair those with Apple TVs. It's just really a great device. And my limit on purchase orders without having to get pre-approval is $100. So at $99, it's really a perfect purchase for me. I can buy it sight unseen. If I ever see any of them put on sale or check a good refurbish special with Apple, I usually pick them up because we'll find uses for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll have a link to AirParrot and Bonjour Gateway in the show notes, so if you want to check that out.
Absolutely. Okay, so our big topic for today is iCloud in school.
iCloud is, I think we would all agree, that it's absolutely a magical service. And me and you, when we talk about the document syncing, we both totally understand what's going on about how when you open a Pages document or if you open a document in ByWord, that it just really works. But the problem with iCloud is I've got teachers who have no idea what iCloud is. When they got their iPhone 4, iPhone 4S, they signed into their Apple ID, it created them an iCloud account, and that's really the last they've seen of it. And I think there are probably a lot of people like that. And so the problem that creates from an educational perspective is it's another login for people to manage. We've already got, I'll run down the list of the logins our folks have to manage. We have our Google Apps login. We have our Advanced Reader login, which Advanced Reader is our reading comprehension program. It's a web-based service. They have a great iPad app. We pay for that yearly. RenWeb is our student information system. We have a login for that. And then we actually have a login to our Macs. So we've already got four logins per employee, and it is driving us crazy. I would love if there was some way to use Google Apps as a hosted modern directory services solution that I could authorize RenWeb to access our Google Apps information, same thing with Advanced Reader. And so that's where I struggle with iCloud, is it's another service to deal with. But what makes those difference is in Advanced Reader and in RenWeb and in Google Apps, I can manage all that. So I can create accounts. I have access to troubleshooting with Google or with RenWeb. And if somebody forgets their password, I can easily reset it on the phone. And so that's really the problem with iCloud, is I've got no way to do that. So what do I do? Do I create iCloud accounts for our teachers and then give them their passcode? Or do I say, hey, here's a new MacBook Air. I want you to create an iCloud account when you log in. And most of them have no clue what I'm talking about. Now, some of them already have iPads and iPhones and they're syncing back and forth and they get it. But I would say half of our teachers, they don't want to know that. In my opinion, they shouldn't have to know. They shouldn't have to know that we've given them an iPad and a MacBook Air and iCloud is keeping their Pages documents in sync. That should just work without them having to think about it. They look to me to provide those solutions. So it's really a consumer-driven service at this time, a wonderful service, but it's still a consumer-driven service. Even if I say I'm going to ignore iCloud completely, if a teacher gets a iPad, we're just not going to worry about iCloud, I've still got a coming day that I'm going to have to deal with this when our computers are actually still running Snow Leopard. Mine is not. Our teachers' laptops are running Snow Leopard. And we will get new computers this spring. We are probably going with 13-inch MacBook Airs. We're actually going to let our teachers pick between a 13-inch MacBook Air or an iPad. The problem with our situation is our student information system does not have a very robust iPad application just yet, nor is it compatible with iPads for the back end part of it. It has a front end for parents. So that's why we still kind of have to do the dance with the Mac and the iPad. But so when we get those new computers and they have Mountain Lion, the best I can tell, software update is going to require an Apple ID. With Snow Leopard and with Lion, software update was done outside of the Mac App Store, and so there was no Apple ID required. And so the best I can tell, I'm going to have to deal with this, and I really don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. When iCloud was first announced, I remember talking to my Apple rep, and I was saying, look, you know, we're a Google Apps school, but if iCloud just supported a management console and it allowed me to use my own domain name, that would be very competitive with Google Apps for a lot of the things that we do. What we use Google Apps for mostly is email, but also a little bit of document collaboration and so on. And if you had Document Sync that also supported some kind of sharing system, then, you know, that's a pretty compelling system. Particularly since it's so integrated into both iOS and Mac OS X.
I agree. And we heavily use Google Docs. All of our lesson planning is done over Google Docs. And so you ask yourself, if we didn't have Google Apps for Education, what would people do with Google Docs? I would have to tell them, hey, create a Google Docs account. 2/3 of them wouldn't do it. And even the ones that did, how would they know the other person's account to set up the sharing? So you'd have to compile a list of each person's email address, basically personal email address. And again, that's just not a solution that scales if you've got more than, you know, a couple of teachers. And so you might be saying, like, this is just Apple's playground. We're just a guest here. And Apple created the iPad, and we were told we had to live within the iTunes ecosystem. But fast forward to 2 years later, and I'm able to manage iPads without ever launching iTunes. We're buying apps largely outside of iTunes. And really, from my opinion, the easier they can make iPads to manage in education, that helps them sell more iPads. So if building a small iCloud interface for education would sell a lot more iPads, I think Apple might do it. But I agree with you. If they had a solution where I could ditch Google Apps and use my own domain name, I would very, very much consider that.
I would too. Certainly, in a world where the kids are pretty much 100% on iPad now, there are a lot of kind of impedance mismatches between Google Apps and iOS. One of the biggest things is that Google Docs is just terrible on the iPad. You know, I mean, there are certainly apps that sync with Google Docs and so on, but I'm always wary about sync products that are made by a third party that then talk to some first party service. You know, I'm wary about depending on that kind of thing. And I think that I've certainly heard from people, you know, I moaned about it a bit on Twitter the other night. I said, oh, Google Docs is just terrible on the iPad. And a couple of people tweeted back to me and said, well, yeah, that's actually the reason why we're not doing iPad in our school, is because we use Google Docs so heavily. And I think that there's possibly a kind of push-pull thing there, where some people who are heavily into Google Docs are actually looking towards things like Chromebooks, because the computer is, in some sense, is secondary to the document collaboration system that they use.
Well, and you wonder, too, will we see a Google Docs app for the iPad? Since Google purchased QuickOffice, you wonder, are they killing off potential competition by making it harder to use Google Docs on the iPad? Or do they see, like, let's get a great, because it is so terrible in the web version, let's get a great application out there, and I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I guess we will. I mean, certainly one of the things is that, I think it was John Gruber came out with this, but there's a lot more Google apps for iOS than there are Apple apps for Android. So I think Google clearly feels they have to be on iOS. Things like you get Chrome, there's now a Google Drive application, there's a native Gmail application, and, well, sort of half native, let's say, Gmail application, and so on. So I think I would not be surprised if we saw a Google branded Docs app show up on iOS.
And I really feel like that if Apple largely ignores us here and they say we're not providing an iCloud interface for education, we feel that it's best for people to have their own personal iCloud accounts. And if they want to use us for work purposes, that's great. But if they largely ignore us here, I think that's really a risk for Apple and really has potential for Google and Microsoft. Because you think about it, even if Apple did roll out iCloud for education, there is no current collaboration from iCloud. I mean, I guess we all remember iWork.com, and it has since been shut down. But in education, we tend to work together, especially teachers in the same grade. They tend to work together. And so I think that's really, really an opportunity for Google. And so, as you said, if all my services are through Google and they continually are improving on the Nexus line and even make a 10-inch version, would some schools be tempted to move when their device refresh came up?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess some of them would be. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the Google Docs type apps on Android. But I don't know that there's not a native Docs client on Android either yet. So I don't see right now that it's Android versus iOS. I really think that Chromebooks, if you're a heavy, heavy Google Docs institution, that people are going to look very closely at Chromebooks. I know there's at least one school in Scotland that has a set of Chromebooks, partly for that reason that their local authority is quite an advanced Google Docs user as well. So I think it feels like it's very early days for iCloud, I think, to be fair, that you're starting to see first steps into collaboration through iCloud with things like shared photo streams in iOS 6 that we know is coming, which I think actually could be quite interesting in the classroom. But there's going to be some time before all of these things come through.
I agree. And I think the challenge for us, if you're in a support type role, is as you have users that figure out what iCloud is, they're going to expect you to support it. I had a situation, I had a text message over the weekend that said, my iCloud is giving me errors. And that's a frustrating situation from a support standpoint, because I have no access to their iCloud account. In fact, I don't even know what their iCloud Apple ID is. Is it their work address? Is it their personal address? And so you really have to start doing and teaching the user how to troubleshoot their own iCloud problems. And it turns out that their backups were not working because their camera roll was completely had overtaken their 5 gigabytes. But those are the kind of situations we run into, and where your users are using a service that's built onto the device you gave them, so they expect you to support it. And if I was in their situation, I would largely expect the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the other sort of tensions in this is that every Apple device has like one iCloud account, basically. And having two iCloud accounts is not really very well supported, if it indeed is supported at all. I'm not sure. So it's one of these things where, you know, if you don't kind of get out ahead of that and set those people up with a work Apple ID, and then they go and make a home Apple ID, and again, you're into this tension that we've talked about before and we'll talk about again, I'm sure, where it's like, do we deploy institutionally completely, or do we deploy personally? And then what do we do in the middle there? You know, do we just say, everybody get your own iCloud account and here's your apps, or here's your iCloud account from the school? But then what happens if that person leaves the school and they've got a bunch of data in that iCloud account, and can they take that iCloud account with them, and so on? There's a lot of data longevity issues there that haven't totally been worked through either.
Or if they have since changed the credit card associated with that account and have bought personal apps with their own credit card, and then you've got this mix of institutional owned apps and personal apps.
Yeah, that's a horrible situation to be in.
And so I really, you know, again, this could be an opportunity for Google, but this could also be an opportunity for Microsoft. Office 365 seems like it's a viable Google Apps alternative now that they have a free education model, and they have hooks into SkyDrive, and then I believe SkyDrive can now hook into Office 2012. And so they're kind of building these hooks. And so you set up a Google Apps account and it can hook into other things. You set up a Microsoft Office 365 account, and then again, it can hook into other things such as SkyDrive, and you have one account to manage. It's the old joke from the Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all. And it's one login to rule them all. And I got a funny story about that. And we really taught our users through years of Active Directory that your Active Directory login is everything. And I've got a teacher, and she has since left our school, and even if she was listening to this, she would think it was funny. She tried to use her work email and password, her Google Apps account, on everything. And so she tried to sign into Amazon using her Google Apps account, sign into Twitter on Google Apps account, and it would never work. So she would send me emails, and I would respond to her, and I'd say, well, you can use that same email address and password, but you have to set up a new account. And so I think that's kind of where Active Directory has brought us. We had unified logins for so long if you were in a Windows Server environment, and then all of a sudden we brought in the Google Apps piece, well, then you brought in the iCloud piece, and pretty soon we all had 5 logins.
Yeah, I was dealing with this just today, actually, because we moved our school website over to Squarespace. And in order for everybody to collaborate on the blogs that we have on that site, everybody's now going to have to make a Squarespace account. And that's on top of the Basecamp account that they've got, which is on top of the Google Apps account they've got, which is on top of their iCloud account. And it's just... password suck is just really what this comes down to, I think. I kind of thinking about this more and more, like, the days of using other people's computers, I think, are coming to an end, because we've all got enough computers now that we're pretty much often using our own. So I keep asking myself, why couldn't it be that I could just, you know, log into anything as long as I was on this piece of hardware, you know? I know there's all kinds of privacy issues and technical issues alongside that, but, you know, if only my phone was allowed to go anywhere in all my accounts, you know, if the password was the UDID of the device or something, because as we know, we can remotely destroy these devices from other computers now. So if you lost them, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Well, and I don't know if you're like me and you use an app like 1Password or LastPass, mm-hmm. but, and I love those apps and they help me to manage my passwords. But if I've got a third grade teacher who really does not love technology outside of using it at work, the last thing that he or she wants to do is have a password management application. They're going
to which needs another login to Dropbox in order to sync from your Mac. You know.
Exactly. So they're going to, what they do is they end up using the same password for everything, and you tell them don't do that, but then they're looking at you, well, how can I remember those? And you kind of mm-hmm. don't have a great answer for them. So now, that's a huge problem, and that's why as many things as I can do through Google Apps, which is our basically directory service, we want to do that because that just simplifies it. One of the mm-hmm. things that I did a few years ago, which I kind of felt was a little radical, is I shut down our domain controller. We were about to switch from being a PC school to a Mac school, and that process moving to Google Apps. And I started thinking about what is a directory server get me? It gets me single login on every machine. It gets me a built-in shared drive and obviously a couple other things. But then I started looking through our existing shared drive. 95% of it was junk, and it was just things that should have been deleted long ago. And then I also thought the future of technology was going to be in single-user devices where you didn't really need to log into other people's machines. You would have your machine, and that's the one that you would take with you. Obviously, there's no Active Directory login for an iPad. You just pick it up and either enter a PIN code or you start using it. So I shut down our directory server, and we just do local logins on our Macs. And it's really mm-hmm. worked out well for us. We do all of our shared, quote-unquote, shared drive through Google Docs. We have a giant shared folder that everybody can add files to. And it's really worked out well. And we've seen there's less of this mass sharing between the whole school and more about sharing between your grade and people you're working on projects with. And we're about to go through our reaccreditation. We're starting to prepare now. We will actually go through it next fall. I'm sure the majority of that will be done over Google Docs.
Absolutely. We're in a similar position because a year ago, we had an Xserve G5, which was running OS 10 server, and we replaced that with a Mac Pro. And looking at that now, I massively over-provisioned that computer because what has happened in the 2 years since we deployed iPad was that the role of the Mac has just diminished and diminished to the point where the way I'm deploying the Macs this year is the iMacs are for iPad syncing and backup. And the laptops, all I'm providing there is I'm putting Lion on those devices, which is the last OS they'll support. And I'm giving the students basically a guest login on the machine. So they'll log in as guest. They'll be able to browse the web, go on to our, there's a couple of websites we subscribe to for curriculum content. They use Flash and Shockwave and Java. And they'll be able to log into their account on those websites and use those services. And then when they log out, the machine, the guest account is just reset to zero. So that's pretty much the role of the Mac now in our school, is as an iPad backup system and as a Flash player. And you're right, you know, our Mac OS X server, I'm pretty sure this is the last one we're ever going to deploy.
Well, when you can do so much of your network through other devices, you don't need a Mac server to do DHCP or DNS. You can do it through other more, I guess, supported devices, that as you move to an iPad model, especially if you do a one-to-one model, you don't have to worry about authenticating users as much, and it's just creating complexity on your network. And so one of the things I did, one of the new hobbies I picked up here recently, as geeky as this is going to sound, is mind mapping. And I picked up iThoughts HD, and it is just a wonderful device for the iPad. And I started mapping out what I thought if Apple were to ask me to build what I thought an iCloud for Schools hosted web interface would look like. And again, they may be building this. We are, again, still really early in the iPad lifecycle, and I'm ultimately thrilled with the tools they've given us at this point. I never dreamed we would have a program like Apple Configurator. So if I sound frustrated, it's not because I don't think Apple's doing a great job. It's because they are, and it makes me look to the future more on what would help us even more. And so I would love to see it be a hosted solution. I would love to see like 2 gigabytes for free per student with that. The ability to buy more for certain students centrally, like I could actually pick, let's say I wanted the 5th graders at our school to have 5 gigabytes or 10 gigabytes. So I could centrally buy that from Apple. I would also love, and I know you would love this too, the ability to do remote support for an iPad, where you could send out, say, a ping request to an iPad on your campus, and then their device would be mirrored to your device, so you could actually see what they were seeing. Have you run into any situations where that would have been helpful?
I used to really want that, I've devolved a lot of that thinking to teachers now, where, I used to kind of monitor people that way, but I think we've learned over the past couple of years that a teacher can be pretty effective in just monitoring the class through classroom management. And certainly for our school, because our school is small, people can just run down the stairs with their iPad and show it to me if they've got a problem. Whereas certainly in a bigger school, you may want to get into some kind of FaceTime plus screen sharing kind of situation. And certainly if you're in any kind of remote situation, that might be useful as well. I mean, my needs are not everybody's needs, that's for certain.
Yeah, that's true. If you're at a small school versus a school that's got 5,000 kids, your needs there are drastically different. One of the other things, and we already talked about it, is I would love to do domain name email, where I could use the iCloud interface, web interface, and obviously the built-in applications on iOS and on the Mac with my own domain name. And then this is probably the biggest one, is document management and mobile device management. And off of the mobile device management section, here's some of the features I'd love to see. Wirelessly push apps with no end-user interaction. So, Fraser, if you wanted to, say, buy iThoughts HD for your entire class, you could buy that and wirelessly make it appear on the device. You would be somehow the administrator of their device or an authorized purchaser of their device, and you could wirelessly push apps. A teacher pin code, and we, I believe, discussed this on the first show we did, where if a student, they were taking tests on their iPad and they went to a break or they went to the cafeteria for lunch, the teacher could get their iPad, use a special pin code to unlock it to see what they had done for their test. Require pin code on shutdown, and that way the Find My Device services that Apple offers would be a little bit more useful, because you couldn't shut it down unless you knew the pin code. And then really tight integration with the volume purchase program, where I'm envisioning some sort of interface where I can see an entire classroom can add an application to the device through the volume purchase program, but also pull that application back at the end of the school year wirelessly. The final section is a document management, where you could push files to individual applications. Now, is this something that I'm guessing you would probably love, correct?
It would certainly be useful. One of the things that I have learned, though, in talking with some people at Apple, is that, and certainly other developers as well, one of the problems with pushing files to applications on iOS is that even if an app has the same name as an app on the Mac, say like Pages on iOS and Pages on the Mac, they don't necessarily have the same file format under the hood, right? So, I don't know, maybe Brushes, for example, the painting application. there may not actually be a file under there that's usable. What you may have is an SQLite database or something. And whenever you do a share this file by email kind of step, what happens at that point, and you've seen this in iWork, where you've got a Pages document you want to send as a Pages document, and for some reason there's a step in there that says creating the document, and there's a wee progress bar goes up. What's happening there is actually that Pages on iOS has an internal file format, I believe, that is different to Pages on Mac OS X. So while you can certainly translate those file formats across, they are not actually directly usable in one app, one version of the app to the other. So if you pushed a Mac Pages document straight into the sandbox on iOS, you would still have some kind of an import step or something. And that's the whole iTunes file sharing horror show, if you like, is the fact that you have this sort of staging area and then you have an import into the internal structures that the application uses. So direct push and pull of documents from iOS application sandboxes is not, it turns out in practice to be not as useful as people think it is, because very often there's not, there appears to be files in the application, but in fact they may be structured in a very different way under the hood, because those developers have assumed that nobody would ever play in their sandbox except their application. So pushing and pulling into that area is not necessarily always as useful as it first seems.
I had not thought of it that way. That's actually a good observation. That would be the technical aspect for basically not having that. That's true. The final thing, just simply an organizational chart where I could organize a group of iPads and say, this is Miss Smith's third grade class. These are her iPads that are in her class. Just a simple, so I could keep organized, view serial numbers, view the student that has a device, see what version of the software it's on, just kind of a checkup of it. But that's pretty much what I would love to see as a hosted solution from Apple for an iCloud for schools. Do you have any thoughts, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think one of the things that you need to think about there is also what happens when a student leaves the school. So it's fine to provide people with, like in Google Apps, for example, you provide people with an email address from the school and so on. But when a pupil leaves the school, I can't sort of let them take that account with them, because it's all tied into the school's management system. So I think one of the really nice feature of that would be if it was possible somehow to sort of jettison an account out of the institutional group and make it a standalone thing. And in some ways, that is the beauty of doing it standalone the way it is that it is such a personal ID that when the student leaves the school, all they would need to do is change the email address associated with it to some personal thing, and they've still got all their data, their backups, the apps that they own, and they just all go with the student to their next thing, to college or to work or wherever, to their personal device. So there's pluses and minuses on both sides there, but I think there are certainly some tricky things. I mean, I had to rewrite, in anticipation of adopting iCloud, I rewrote some parts of our acceptable use policy. And one of the things I kind of ran into the sand with a little bit was, what happens if somebody runs out of their 5 gigs of backup space? And that will happen, I know, because I've seen kids with devices which have got, 6-7 gigabytes of files and data and so on. And remember, bear in mind, these are devices that don't even have a camera on them, never mind the ones that we'll get in the future. So in the end, I ended up writing things like, you must maintain enough free space on iCloud to back up your device. And if you go over that, we'll show you how to not back up the biggest files. But eventually you, the parent, may have to subscribe to pay, £5 or £10 a year for your child to have more backup space or something like that. So we had to kind of start writing it into the acceptable use policy that you have to make sure you've got backup space and so on. And that's the kind of the ugly side of consumerization, is that you take some of those things that rightfully the school should do, like provide backup facilities, and you push some of those responsibilities back onto the consumers. Now, it's not like it's hard or anything. It's not the most complex operation ever to upgrade your storage, but there's always questions of who pays for it and so on. Now, in an independent school, ultimately the parents pay for everything, but if you're in a state school, for example, there are some state schools where you absolutely cannot ask the parents to pay for anything to do with school at all. And then how does the school fund people's additional backup space and so on and so on?
Right, because there's the question that's like, well, you just need to delete some of your data. Well, then there's the question of what data. And in reality, if a student is using an iPad enough and creating enough content on there that they need more, you as an administrator would love to buy them more space, especially if you can have a big pool. You can give them a quota. You can increase their quota as they need it. But again, there's just no way. You're right. There's no easy way to do that. And even in our situation, in parents' heads, and rightfully so, they're thinking, well, you provide the infrastructure for IT at the school. Why should we have to pay for that? Aren't we already paying for that through our tuition? And I see their point, because I would largely probably feel the same way.
Yeah, and you don't want to be in a situation where you have to sort of nickel and dime the parents for a little bit more here and a little bit more there. That's one of the sort of decisions we made about applications a couple of years back, was that we weren't going to be going home every week and asking them to buy a new application. And that was certainly very important in our early days, because we didn't know which apps we wanted people to have. So we wanted a lot of freedom to experiment. Today, I think we could certainly talk about a baseline set of applications and say, you guys, parents, have to pay for this, 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 and this, these five applications that everybody needs to have. But again, that's somewhere on that spectrum of institutional versus personal in terms of app deployment and ownership and so on.
Well, I think Apple has a lot of opportunity here. And I guess their hope at this point is that the ecosystem is ultimately strong enough that the added complexity of having to create iCloud accounts keeps us on the platform. And I think it will. I know it will for us. I know it will for your school. And I think it will for most schools, because once you see the ease that kids can use the iPad and that the tools that are there, that the applications and the low-cost, high-quality applications, most of us are willing to deal with an additional step or an additional bit of complexity.
Yeah, I think so. It's funny, you know, when you were talking about all the scenarios that you could envisage there, all of them were around teachers. They weren't around kids, you know, because these kids are actually already quite experienced iOS systems administrators, because they do it for their own iPhone or their own iPod Touch or whatever. So it's possibly a generational thing as well. I thought of one other thing. If we're going to talk iCloud and Apple ID and institutional stuff, one of the biggest problems I have right now is deploying books, because there is no way to gift books or so on and so on. So I can't even buy multiple copies of a book. As you know, books aren't part of the volume purchase program either. It's only applications. So one thing that would be very powerful for us as well is if there was some way to deploy books from the iBookstore in a similar way to you're talking about deploying wirelessly applications through the same way. The whole issue of electronic books is probably a show in itself, and probably quite a good show actually. So we should probably talk about that some other time, but it's definitely something that's kind of, it's been on the back burner for a while, and I think it's about to kind of come to the surface.
I agree. We publish a newsletter or a magazine twice a year at our school. We call it The Foundations. It's a really nice magazine about what's going on at the school. And our next one comes out in January. And I've actually already written my article, and the title of it is "Where Are My Electronic Books?" And it goes into this complexities, and that there's no good way for a school to where we purchase the books for our students and then they basically use them all year. There's no good management system, and it just doesn't scale in that way.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different things embedded in that, and we're going to talk about iTunes U in a future show. And I think probably the sort of the second part of that possible two-parter would be the iBook side of things as well. So we'll definitely get into that in more detail later.
That'll be a fun show. I've been messing around with iTunes U, and it's absolutely incredible. That and iBooks Author may be the two most exciting things software-wise that Apple has done in a long time.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I think about that next show. We'll keep the listeners waiting for that one.
Well, that's all I have for iCloud in schools. Do you have anything else to add?
I think you've definitely covered all the bases there. It's, again, very early days, but I do think that the way that iCloud was introduced was not a mistake. You know, they got up at WWDC and they said, well, hey, today we're going to talk about iOS 5, I think it was, We're going to talk about iOS 5, we're going to talk about Line, and we're going to talk about iCloud. And those, that was not a mistake, that was a platform show, and it was all about the mobile platform, the desktop platform, and the cloud platform. And I think what if there's a criticism to be made of Tim Cook at this point in his Apple career is that he has not yet found the words to articulate the iCloud strategy as clearly as Steve Jobs articulated the digital hub strategy back in 2002. And I think I sort of understand where iCloud goes. It is actually, it is the new digital hub, and the devices are all just peripherals to that cloudy hub, if you like. But I don't think, I know for a fact that consumers, teachers in my school, they just keep coming up to me going, what is iCloud? You know, is it just the internet? And I'm like, yeah, it sort of is just the internet, but it's also this and that and this and that. And there's a lot of different kind of moving parts in iCloud, even though it is apparently very simple. So there's definitely challenges ahead with iCloud, but we're, what, a year into iCloud world now, and it's certainly working pretty well for me. And a lot of the things that it does, it just does very, very well indeed. There are certainly still wrinkles, and those will have to be ironed out, but I think the future of sync is much more promising now than I've ever thought it was before.
I agree, and to me at this point, iCloud is magical for my use with my iPad, Mac, and iPhone. It's just magical. But I think this is ultimately the reason we're doing this show, is that there is another side to that for people who aren't into this technology as we are, and they see iCloud on their phone and they don't fully understand what it is, and I really feel it's my role to help them to understand, because it's not their job to be the tech guy. We want them to be the tech enablers in their classroom, but they shouldn't have to worry about the back end sort of this platform. That's for me to worry about. And so it's always good just to remember that I always try to base when I explain things to our staff on the person who could care less about the iPhone or the iPad. How do you make it so they're excited about it?
Yeah. And I think that's, in many ways, that's our job today. It's not necessarily to set up and deploy and maintain all of these services, but it's to explain to people what these services conceptually are, and also how they fit into their life. You know, what does iTunes U do for me as a teacher? Well, it's your kid's new homework diary. Step one. Oh, great, I'm excited about that. Let's get on with it. You know, and things like that, I think it's not always clear to people how these things fit into their life. And it's not clear because they're such general services. iTunes U being a good example, it's a very, very flexible framework for delivery of content. You've got to kind of put some of your structure on top of that and say, well, I'm going to use this for this and this for that and this for something else. And while it's great that we don't own any infrastructure and we don't have to manage hard drives and power supplies blowing up, what we do have to do is put all of these pieces into some kind of conceptual framework so that people know, well, in this school, we've got Google Apps and iTunes U, and that's it. Whereas in this other school, we're doing Dropbox and Evernote and something else. And the cost of not owning this infrastructure is dealing with sometimes unstable and sometimes incompatible interfaces and ones that change every so often. And I think in many ways, that's where I see my role going in the future, is keeping people up to date with changes and explaining the implications of those changes rather than necessarily making it so that change never happens to anybody.
Well, and I agree, because as we use more technology, there's more opportunity for things to go wrong. Like, we are having a bug right now with some of our machines that are using Lion. We have a few of them that are still on Lion. Screen sharing in 10.7.4 is very much a problem. It is not working well. And there's a known issue. If you Google it, there's a lot of people having the same problem. And while I would love to say I'll fix it today, I'm ultimately waiting on Apple to provide a fix. And so I agree with you. It's to be the advocate. It's to be the enabler, the teacher, the trainer, the informer, the researcher. That seems like it's the role of IT in the future.
Absolutely.
And so I guess that's, if you don't have anything else, we'll call it a show.
I think so.
We appreciate all the great feedback we've gotten so far. If you, If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that's great. And certainly we love the tweets we've been seeing. The feedback has been great. Definitely continue doing that. If you want to find us elsewhere on the internet, I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers. I'm on app.net. That does not have a great ring to it at this point. At Bradley Chambers as well. And then my blog is chambersdaily.com.
Yep, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, FS on app.net, and the blog is at spears.org.
Who is FS on Twitter?
I don't know. Somebody who has tweeted maybe twice in the past 3 years. I really want that username.
That's got to drive you nuts when you would put it to great use and they're just sitting on it.
Well, I didn't appreciate back in the day just how important a short username was going to be in Twitter land.
Well, again, thanks everybody for listening. Again, outofschool.net is the place where you can read all the show notes, find all the links, and again, we appreciate you listening.